The Zone is presented by Guaranteed Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you. Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels. We had up until 2 o'clock. Mick Schaefer will join us coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. Right now, let's talk some Royals baseball. Josh Kaiser, One Royal Way podcast, joining us here in the Zone. Josh, welcome in. How are you, sir?
I'm doing swell. I was enjoying watching some baseball, a really hot Royals team, and not watching stupid golf that you old folks
is that
all
about?
Weekend. That's so gross.
Coming in
that's
hot
so
with your
great weekend.
with your golf slander. What is that about? It's the Masters,
I
mean, man.
It's a jaded soul. Tell me how boring baseball is. Then they go and rave about how awesome golf is. I think there's too many overlap between those two audiences.
PGA Tour is already messing with his interference there on the phone.
That's see, now you got the PGA Tour. The Liv is now messing with the phone connection.
Kaiser, big
Josh, because you're cutting in and out every time. You're like, baseball, da-da-da. But I'll tell you, that sucked. You know, it sort of sounded like you hated baseball but loved golf. That's what it made it sound like.
Big Cellular is not ready for my golf take.
Let's put him on hold and see if we can reconnect, Josh. We did hear the Big Cellular. I do love that. Big cell phone company's not ready for his takedown of golf. Because you want to come out, Josh? You want to talk about baseball and whether baseball's boring? You better have your defense of golf going on because he's going to throw it right back in your face. But I enjoyed watching both yesterday. Watched a little baseball. You know, while that game was going on, obviously. I'm watching the golf. That was great. It's a full day of baseball and activities. Little man had a tournament in the morning. Go play that, have some fun, get back, clean up, watch some baseball, watch the final grouping go and play in the Masters. It was awesome. And watch Chris Segal do his thing in the eighth inning. That's what everybody was there for. We got Josh back. Josh, have you escaped Big Cellular yet?
I mean, they're here to censor me, and they will not stop my takes.
We'll see. We'll see. Let's talk about a man's groin. Salvi, as what is being deemed as a groin strain. We don't have any update or anything, so us discussing the potential of Salvador Perez missing time is not us discussing any sort of news that has come down with Salvi missing time. But what is, I guess, your concern level with how Salvi's been playing, what this team looks like, your concern level if Salvi were to miss some time with the groin injury?
I mean, it's definitely a concern. I mean, the depth you guys were talking about earlier, Logan Porter swinging a hot bat in Omaha, but it's not necessarily that we can – you know, pinpoint. I mean, it's a tough stretch. If it's a month that Salvi's going to be sitting out, we got Chicago, Baltimore, Toronto, Detroit, who's been hot as Royals as well, and then Toronto, Texas, and Milwaukee. So if he misses a month, that's a month worth of games that we really, really could use the captain in that lineup. That groin presence, we need it.
That's your takeaway is Salvi's groin needs to be in the lineup. I think the entire body of Salvi in the lineup would be beneficial, but certainly that part, a healthy aspect of it. I became annoyed yesterday, Josh, because I talked about it in the first hour. Sterling Marte, that he was given the lane to the outside. Like, this is the concern that you have and the worry about when, you know, your captain – and somebody is as good as he is in Salvi that plays catcher. So you've always got that, the Buster Posey, Maurer. You got the Maurers of the world that we've seen come along. It's always that concern. But Salvi gave him a lane to the outside, and the dude slid inside right at Salvi. So him getting up and apologizing to Salvi was, you know, hollow ears and eyes for me, and was a bit disingenuous when he slid right at him because he knew the ball was coming in. It was going to be a close play, so let me slide right at the catcher and maybe I'll be safe. And I'm going to be really pissed if Salvi's out for an extended period of time, because Salvi did what he was supposed to do, got out of the way, was on the inside part of the line, gave him a lane. Gave him a lane that was the line and also on the outside, and he still slid right into him. I hope it isn't anything serious, but this is always a concern when you talk about a team that has expectations and hope. You know, if this team was not viewed, if this was an evaluation season, Josh, we'd be going, it sucks to lose Salvi, but now we get a chance to see what Freddie Fermin can be. No, this year it sucks that Salvi's out, but Freddie Fermin, man, I hope you can pick it up and pick up the slack if Salvi's going to miss an extended period of time.
Yeah, 100%. It's a killer of momentum that the Royals have all of right now, seemingly. It was a tough couple losses there in New York, but, I mean, this is a momentum killer, potentially. It's one of your more important, your captain, but also one of the important bats in your lineup, a power hitter at that. It's a tough blow for a team that can't really afford it at that position. At the same time, like, I agree. I thought of the same thing about Marte yesterday, enough to got to wear one the next inning. But instead, they go after Jack McNeil's finger, and he said a very bad word after that. And it looked really, really hurt. But, yeah, and then Lindor had the backswing hit Fermin on the top of the head. I was like, I made a joke about it on Twitter, like, tongue-in-cheek, like they're trying to take out all our catchers. But that was really what was happening. It was very strange. But I do, yeah, especially in a rule like that's designed for player safety, you're supposed to be able to avoid situations like this and keep those stars in the lineup, and to see it happen in that situation.
Josh Kaz is our guest, One Royal Way podcast. Let's try it again. Let's put him on hold and see if we can connect one more time.
Jay Monahan, you come on here and you take a shot at the Masters,
man,
like that.
They are the. This is what happens when, you know, now that Liv's involved, you got some heavy dealers there. So there you go. You know, Blake Mitchell hits a home run over the weekend. Salvi gets injured. What do we do? Carter Jensen, you got some options there. Oh, they're too young. Screw that. Let's see what they got. No, obviously joking. But the Royals have the White Sox for a number of games, and hopefully you can go and win a series even without Salvi, before returning home and facing off against the Orioles and a really good team. And Jackson Holliday picked up his first hit as a major league player, and obviously expected to be one of the best players in baseball as the season goes along. And the Royals have a couple of those too, with Cole Reagans and Bobby Witt. But they also have a team that offensively has been so hot and cold, and we saw that over the weekend. 11 runs on Saturday, 2 runs Friday and Sunday combined. But Salvador Perez is certainly a concern. His age, he plays catcher, all of that stuff is I worry about that. And again, it pisses me off that Marte slid like that. But, you know, it's part of baseball. The Royals end up losing. And it also takes away, because we're talking about the injury, takes away a fantastic play by MJ Melendez. He makes the catch in left field and just throws a dime. Just the kids in football will call that a dot. Throws a dot to Salvi and gets the out. And, of course, then, you know, if that thing was up the line either way, you know, they score the run and they win anyway. And Salvi's still there. Not worth it, as they say. Definitely not worth it to maybe lose. Hopefully, you know, he's a tough dude. We know that he's a tough guy. Maybe DHing a couple of times, playing first maybe if he has to a little bit before getting back there behind the plate and catching. Maybe that's the way to go about it. And, you know, maybe it won't be an issue. We'll see. Visiting with Josh Kaiser, One Royal Way podcast. Josh, blink twice if you hear me.
But 3 strikes and you're out, so this is it.
This is the last one. We'll see. Well, maybe Seagal is behind the plate, and he's going to give us a few more pitches to see if you can really throw a strike. I know that those were strikes from Stratton, but I want them to be really, really strikey. That was a little strikey. I want them to be really strikey before I'm going to get on board with that one. I you know what? Chris Stratton needs to be better. You can't walk 4 guys. But there is an element of he was out of the inning with Jeff McNeil. He never swung the bat. 5 pitches, he did strike out, but he ended up walking, and he got the soft contact. So how do you come away from that game real issue with Stratton? He walks four guys. That shouldn't happen, obviously, in a big situation in the eighth inning. Or he got the soft contact. He kind of got out of it a couple of different times, it felt like, in throwing some pitches. But also, he wasn't consistent enough in that inning, maybe in the old adage of getting the call from an umpire or something like that.
Yeah, and I came out of that game thinking, you know, it's definitely on him because he kept going to the well, and the well was dry. But looking at the K-zone for the rest of the year, like you said earlier, Cole Reagan, so the angle's a little bit different. I don't know. But he was consistently a strike earlier in that. Definitely should have been getting that call, but I don't know. He looked like he was also missing his spots. And I know Fermin wasn't helping him with the framing of it, but it also looked like he was kind of coming in. Fermin was expecting something inside, and he was having to come in. It has something to do with definitely like getting the call versus not getting the call. Well, Fermin's good at framing anyway, so I just think that it was Stratton missing the spot more so. But in the end, like, it is an umpire's job to be consistent. If you're not going to maintain the robot strike zone that we see on the TV, then you have to be consistent within your own zone. That was not happening either. So a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. Stratton does have to be better, and it is what it is. But at the same time, the offense did nothing yesterday. It's hard to blame an ump for losing that game. A timely, impactful calls and being missed, but the offense was non-existent yesterday. And that's really what stuck out to me as the problem as yesterday's game.
Yeah, I know that sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, your phone is working right now, so you go ahead.
Don't blink. Everybody stop breathing. Just let me finish. It's an inconsistent offense that is very streaky, still very good whenever it's good, and it's really, you know, low end whenever it's bad. So that's all it was.
Yeah, and I wanted to touch on that. Josh Kaiser is our guest, One Royal Way podcast. That they've had five games this year where they've scored two or fewer runs, and they've had one, two, three, four, five games where they've scored double digit runs. Their record in those games is 6-4. So you know what? They're playing a 600 baseball, but it's obviously much better when you score 10 runs because they're undefeated in those games. As you look at this team, is this a team that just simply you expect them to be more hot and cold? Or is this a team that maybe you can find some consistency along the way and put some, you know what, nights together where you're going out there not scoring 11 and then 1 and then 12 and then 2? And if that's the case, why do you think the hot and the cold, the feast or famine is going on with this offense?
I think it largely lies in the offense being hot and cold in the not great ability to get on base through walks. I know their walk percentage is in decent shape this year, but historically speaking, most of these batters aren't great at drawing walks. So the best teams really, when they're having off games or they're up against the tough pitcher, they're seeing pitches and they're going to take walks when they can get them. And it doesn't seem like the Royals, they're a very aggressive team. They will take walks. So I think that's where it largely, you know, comes from, and that's going to happen. It's going to happen that way. That's just how it is. So,
what do you think they do against the White Sox? Do they take all three? Is it imperative that they take all three? Or, look, even though it's a team that's won two games, win series. Win the series against the White Sox, come home, and get ready for the seven-game series, three-game set against the Orioles, four against the Blue Jays before heading back on the road. Are you of the greedy mindset of it's the White Sox, damn it, go get three, or win series and that's it? That's all you can ask for in baseball, even against an awful team like the White Sox that have their injuries to the point that they are signing Tommy Pham to come in and help.
I think you got to take three. I don't think it's imperative, but I think two out of three is imperative considering how that tough stretch those next month is going to be. So if you can get your wins early, get that momentum going into that tough stretch, that's going to be a big deal for South. Got to be so. Got to get a series win against these pale hoes, and then take on the rest of this competition and really, you know, make it a good run.
So the next 19 games that they play after the White Sox series, next 19: Baltimore, Toronto, Detroit, Texas, Milwaukee. They play a couple of those series twice in there. Toronto, they play two different times. But those are the next 19 games are against those teams that are all sitting at or above 500. You got Milwaukee that's leading the Central. You've got the Blue Jays are at 500 at 8-8. You've got the Rangers that are leading the West. They're sitting 8-8, but they're still leading the West. And Detroit, the Tigers, in your own division, you're a half game up on them right now, and they're sitting 9-6. So as much as we talked about, Josh, the beginning of the season, the first few series, and stay afloat, right? You know, don't drown, just stay afloat, tread water, see what you can do. Now it seems like is the real after the White Sox, after these seven games that you had against the White Sox, four last week, now three tonight, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Now it's the time to where can we see them over these 19 games stay afloat? Can we see them tread water and not drown?
Yeah, this is the entree. That was the appetizer. There was some good amuse-bouche, if you will. but you need some meat and potatoes. Really going to get a good test and really a real measuring stick how we're going to see over the next 3-4 weeks, and specifically and potentially without the girthy groin that's behind the plate on a regular basis. So that's going to be a tough stretch. We got to show what we're made of and go get those wins.
We're going to end it on that because that's a great way to end it. While your phone was starting to cut out there, we got that from you. I'm not going to repeat it because then I don't want to be the one that says it, but we got that from you. Josh, really appreciate the time, brother. See if your lawyers can contact Big Sell and see if you can get out of the doghouse with the LIV and the PGA and the Masters and golf to join us next week. That'd be awesome. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
It's really weird that they would target me. I don't understand. I don't understand why it's me, but it is. But I appreciate it as always.
Any known threat. Josh Kiser, One Royal Way Podcast. Any known threat, they will come after you. Big Sell, they ain't bleeping around.
Josh Kaiser's a huge voice in this town. So
that's exactly right.
As soon as he comes on and takes a shot at their golden boy on the biggest day of their year.
That dude's wearing not one, but two different green jackets.
Yep.
And Josh Kiser, rocking a blue sport coat, comes on and takes a shot at the green jacket. Yeah, we're going to go ahead and cut off that connection. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, continue rolling. We will hear from Andy Reid. We'll hear from Patrick Mahomes. That comes up next. All right, hanging out here on this Monday edition of The Zone, Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels. We'll talk with Mick Schaefer, KSHB 41 Sports Director, presented by Empower Payments. That comes up at 1 o'clock. We got Learn, Funniest, Best in the 1 o'clock hour as well. Thank you to Josh Kiser, One Royal Way Podcast, joining us to talk some Royals. No thank you to Big Cellular for trying to keep a man down and not allowing him to really give all of his thoughts and opinions, put that out there. So that's unfortunate. Luckily, he's got a podcast as well. They didn't go and hear that, but we would have liked for him to have, some more opinions here that were heard besides him talking about a part of Salvador Perez, which I appreciate.
What part was it, Jason?
You heard that 1:45 on Friday. Go ahead and listen in for that. Andy Reid, you hear him weekly during the regular season, and it is phase one of OTAs. We played a clip of Andy Reid in the 11 o'clock hour talking about Rashee Rice's opening statement, and then Rashee Rice, who he said is participating in phase one because the participation is just Zoom. So there is no real participation except via Zoom. So he'll participate. Asked about what about phase two when it's in person. They'll sort of cross that bridge when they get there. They're not thinking about that far down the line. So Andy Reid continued. He was asked about the additions of Hollywood Brown and Irv Smith.
Yeah, so Hollywood Brown is a good speed receiver. Excuse me. He can play inside or outside. And I stay away from saying a deep threat, although he can do that. He can play within the offense and do all of the different routes that we ask. So he's a nice addition, and he's got some experience and production. Who was the second one you asked about? Irv? Yeah. So Irv is a tight end and kind of does everything pretty good. I mean, he's a good, solid football player. He's a good receiver, good after the catch, good blocker. Not necessarily the biggest guy, but really plays a good physical game and kind of like what he what he's shown in the past. I think important really for both these guys that they're able to keep themselves, you know, healthy and rolling. And that'll be part of it as we go forward there.
Hey, Coach. Couple of quick questions for you. One, just a housekeeping question. You mentioned at the combine that Ken Flagel had retired. Any other changes on the coaching staff?
Yeah, so that's a good point, Matt. So Ken Flagel did retire. We were able to move Rod Wilson into that position. Alex Whittingham, likewise, will take a little bit bigger role from his position. We hired Louis Adazio and that quality control position there on defense. And Louis's got a bunch of experience coaching. He also adds a flavor that he's been an offensive coach, a line coach, and at the major college level. And that'll give us some good, productive information for the defense going forward. So able to add good quality into the mix here.
He mentioned Louis Adazio. If you recognize the last name, that would be the still Boston College head coach. No, it's Steve Adazio. I think he's still at BC. Is Steve Adazio? No, he's not there at Boston College anymore. So he is. He's like 5 years removed from Boston College.
Nailed it.
He's last at BC in 2019. Louis Adazio is Steve Adazio's son. Steve Adazio likes to use the word dude. He's a dude. He's a dude, man. You know what, this guy? You know, he's a great football. He's a dude. All right? You get some dudes on the field. Steve Adazio, his dad, now the offensive line coach at A&M, or was recently the offensive. I don't know what he's doing now. He might be the head coach of Boston College now. I'm not sure. I know his son is on the Chiefs coaching staff. I know that. But Hollywood Brown saying that, interesting, he said, I'm going to stay away from calling him a deep threat.
Yeah.
Even though he can do that, but he talked about everything that Hollywood Brown's going to do for the team. He's going to play different positions. He's got the route tree. He'll fit in with the offense. So I don't think he's shying away from calling him a deep threat because he doesn't think he can be a deep threat. He doesn't want to pigeonhole him into, oh, he's a deep threat. Okay, well, that's what Hollywood Brown's doing then. He's on this team to be the deep threat. Now, he can be, but he's a wide receiver that can do that as opposed to just put him out there and run deep.
Well, you look at his yards per reception over his career, averages 11.6. I don't think you consider that necessarily a deep threat. Like, when you think of a deep threat, I think you get pigeonholed into the MVS.
Yeah.
Again, not for sure. That's not maybe the best.
But that was his role.
That was his role.
Yeah. May not be the best example, but that was his role.
This guy had, 67 receptions in 12 games in 2022, 51 receptions in 14 games. Again, banged up a lot of the past couple seasons.
Also playing with some crappy quarterbacks.
But again, he's getting a lot more than just the deep ball. There will be a lot of underneath routes. There's going to be a lot of intermediary throws as well to Hollywood Brown. Again, not just Justin Watson, not just MVS, not just your typical, oh yeah, he's just running straight down the field, just throw it up to him. That's not necessarily what he's going to be used for.
Andy Reid continued saying that this remote style of phase one, generally more favorable for the offense, but the defense can benefit as well.
Yeah, just only because, Nate, on the being more productive for the offense, because they can go out and actually throw the ball around and you know, do that part of it. Defensively, it's hard to set up an offense and then have an offense do whatever they do against you, you know. So I think this phase one favors the offense that way. But at the same time, we go through this whole scheme evaluation in the offseason, offensively, defensively, and on special teams. And so that's where you benefit with being able to just do that on Zoom and or likewise in person. But Zoom, you can get everything done that you need to do there with a video and or new things that you might want to slip in there.
Gotcha. And secondly, all that Kadarius Toney is down in Texas, obviously with the rest of the guys working out with Patrick. Can you just explain what your message was to Kadarius in the exit interviews and what you would just like to see from him this offseason?
Yeah, so listen, I mean, Kadarius is arguably one of the most talented guys we have on the team. It's just a matter of staying healthy and being able to stay on the field. And, you know, you always hear about the reliability, accountability, all those things that go into it. And so I'm expecting him to come back ripping and ready to go. And it's great that he's down there working with Pat and putting the work in. So that's, you know, that's a positive. But, yeah, no, and listen, we like Kadarius. It's just a matter of having him on the field.
I think his best spot is when he's not on the field. I think we've seen that. Like he doesn't make, and you can we can relitigate it, whatever. We'll probably do that as you know the summer gets here and training camp and everything, and on into the regular season. If he is getting playing time and still on the team, I mean we can relitigate it. But I think his best spot is on the bench from what we saw last year. He was the most impactful wide receiver the Chiefs had last year. Just wasn't a good one. But to me, there's no arguing. The most impactful wide receiver the Chiefs had last year was Kadarius Toney. Just wasn't, you think of impactful, you think of good things. That was not the case. Matter of him staying healthy. How injured was he?
Yeah.
Because he coincidentally got injured right after the Patriots game, which the last target thrown to Kadarius Toney was the ball that slipped out of his hand, went through his hands, and was intercepted. And Patrick Mahomes was seen on the sideline going, I just said that. That's the last target Kadarius Toney got in the season. Okay, so was he coincidentally injured after that? Or were the Chiefs protecting him by, you're injured, we got to make a bleeping example that this isn't acceptable. All right, the lack of concentration, whoever it is, it's not acceptable. Sit your ass down, figure it out, but in the meantime, we're going to win a Super Bowl. And if number 15 can't trust you, you ain't playing. Sorry. So it ain't about staying healthy to me. It's about number 15 earning the trust back, or him earning number 15's trust back is the best.
Well, one word I found very interesting was accountability, because he goes, whether it's injury, reliability, and accountability. He kind of glossed over kind of quickly, but he goes reliability and accountability.
That's true.
And so when I heard accountability, that's what I thought of. Okay, he's at least acknowledging that aspect of Kadarius Toney.
And he's down there, and unlike McColl, he's trying to be on Pat ass all day. You know, McColl couldn't be on his ass all day, so hopefully Kadarius Toney is doing that. He's down there. That's a good step in the right direction. Is, you know, taking part in those, and you can actually throw and get a little used to everything, and it's great to have these. With Hollywood Brown, for him being down there. And you know what? Sky Moore down there, and hey, great. Have everybody down there and improve as much as you can.
Yeah. In the first clip, very quickly, I was laughing, and you even brought this up. They already forgot about Irv Smith.
I know.
Hey, who else did you bring up?
Who was
Irv Smith.
What was the other guy's name? Irv Smith. Explain a little bit who is he again? Irv Smith, the tight end. Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah, I mean, there's a depth at the tight end spot, you know, just
My favorite thing he said was, Irv Smith, he's a tight end. That was the first thing
he is
a tight end. We know that, Andy. That just made me laugh. He's a tight end.
Irv Smith, yeah, a little bit about Irv Smith. He's a tight end.
Does a little bit of everything. You know.
Sagittarius, you know, went to Alabama. It's a big recruit out of high school. And is right-handed, but he does write left-handed. It's weird, you know. And anything else you want to know about Irv Smith?
Irv is short for Irving, just so you know. Yeah.
Smith is long for Smith. All right, Andy Reid continued, and Sam McDowell asked Andy why allowing Patrick to run part of the OTAs in Texas works for this team.
Yeah, so a couple of things, Sam. You know, we're coming off a 21-game season, it's a short off season, as you guys know. So, it gives the guys an opportunity to stay away from here, maybe a little bit more laxed atmosphere, but at the same time, get a ton of work done. And also, there's a little camaraderie that goes with it, which is important on the offensive side, that the guys work and play together and kind of are on the same page. And it gives Pat an opportunity, along with the quarterbacks, to be able to kind of talk to the guys about what they see in a little bit slowed down, you know, pace. So it's been effective for us. The guys have come back in great shape, and they've come back knowing what they're responsibilities are. And at the same time, they're getting, you know, that influx of new and our scheme evaluation from last year thrown at them by the coaches.
And the second one I had was just a follow-up to what Adam had asked about Rashee's participation, understanding that there's certain particulars you can't comment on, but can you get into it all, explain to it all the process of how it's determined, whether or not he'll be part of the next phase going forward?
Yeah, we'll just see how it goes there, Sam. I mean, I want to get, you know, keep gathering the information from the law enforcement people. We'll just see where everything goes from there. Let the process take place.
All right, so there you go with Rashee Rice. We know that he is participating in Phase 1 because it is all remote. It's all by Zoom. Phase 2, they'll be in person. Here's the thing about allowing Patrick Mahomes and the offensive players, the skill position players, to work out in Dallas with him as opposed to being at the facility. You give the responsibility to Patrick Mahomes. He thinks it works. But to me, the important part of what he talked about is, you know, besides the, well, guys can opportunity to not be here, right? Because, you know, they play so long. But that to me is not the most important part. And he said, guys come back in great shape and an understanding of the scheme. If he gave Patrick Mahomes the opportunity to do that and guys came back and it's like, what did you guys do while you were down there? You know, we hit a couple restaurants up, you know, we barred a little bit. We had some camaraderie, you know, we hung out for a little, play some video games.
Kyler Murray style, just all Call of Duty.
That's right. But you can see by the video and you know by Patrick Mahomes' passion as well that they're not just down there playing grab ass, you know, just twiddling their thumbs and hanging out because this is awesome. We don't have to be in Kansas City at the facility. We can just do this and hang out and shoot the breeze. No, when he says that, you know, it's effective for us. Guys come back in great shape, understanding of the scheme, the responsibilities, because Patrick Mahomes is making it so that if you're going to be down here, we're working because I'm trying to win another Super Bowl, all right, and either get on board, and if you're going to be down here, you're going to be working. And I think there's a decent chance that they're putting in more work down there with Patrick Mahomes and Bobby and all of the training and everything rather than being in Kansas City and going through some meetings in person.
Well, and I always think, too, sometimes, I'm not saying you don't respect Andy or some of the coaches, but it's always nice when you get it from a player, right? I think there's something to that when you have a chance to step back and say, I'm learning this from a player. Maybe there's some questions you can ask them that you wouldn't necessarily want to ask the wide receiver coach because you're worried about your playing time.
You hope that that guy would know the answer.
Well,
yeah. Just joking, Blaymeyer. Not saying you don't.
Just certain nuances, though, where it is a more relaxed feel. And early on, I do think it's great for especially young players who are trying to get more comfortable, right? Because everyone's been there. Where you're a new guy, you don't want to make an ass out of yourself. So maybe you have a question. You're like, I don't want to ask. I'm not going to ask the teacher. I'm not going to ask the coach. I'll find a guy to ask afterwards. Well, now these guys can go through the workouts and ask Mahomes right then and there. I think it's good. I think this is great for Mahomes, great for the wide receivers, great for the guys who are down there. It's a more laid back atmosphere. But you're right. Yes, they're still getting a lot of work in because you know it's Mahomes. If it were Kyler Murray, I don't know how much work's getting in there. But you know with Mahomes, he is.
Because this is now what, the third year, the fourth year they've done this. Again, if it wasn't effective, they wouldn't allow it to keep going on.
Yeah.
And also, the more years you do it, the more years you get an idea of what works. And what do we focus on? What should we be focusing on? What are we doing here? What's beneficial there? Andy Reid continued, and he gave us a preview of what to expect from Reese Lightning, Luis Riz-Ahmed.
Yeah, so he was introduced to this when he was young. His dad played 6 years in the NFL, not NFL, but the European League. And so, you know, he's somewhat familiar with the sport, and he sure has had a lot of success in rugby, and there's some similarities there. It's a contact sport, and he's had to catch the ball and do those things and run with the ball. And so we'll start him off at the running back position, get him to feel comfortable with that going forward here. And, you know, he's had an opportunity to also go down there to Dallas and work with Pat and so again, he'll get used to some of these calls and through our Zooms and the plays, and then we'll just see where it goes from there. And Dave will have an opportunity to have him on special teams and see where that goes. But, you know, that's not an easy transition, but he seems to be wired playing competitive rugby since he professionally since he was 17 years old. So he's sitting there at 23. He's had a pretty good career with that, and kind of understands the professional game and the mindset to play at a professional level.
Hey, Andy, I appreciate it. I wanted to follow up real quick. Do you, and then I'll have a second question, but do you see Reese Zammit, especially with the new kickoff rules, being a return specialist type guy? Will he be in that mix potentially?
Potentially. We're just going to, again, we're just going to see how it goes here. You know how Dave puts them all out there. They're all out there working on returns. So, before and during practice, and we'll just see what his feel is and where that goes.
And then I wanted to look forward to the draft real quick. And there's so much focus when you talk mock drafts and with the public on that first round. But if you look at roster construction, is there too much emphasis on that first round, since so many of the guys that fill out rosters are actually not first round guys or even undrafted?
I'm not sure I've seen as many mock drafts going on as they're going on right now. I mean, I know, but it's an amazing amount of mock drafts out there. And I got to give the guys credit. They're all a little different. Some guys are onto their third first round mock draft, you know, doing that. But so Brett's got Brett heads this whole thing up and does a nice job with making sure that he's got all the rounds covered. And there is a tremendous amount of input that goes into this first round pick. However, it also has a very, there's like a 50% success rate over a 5-year period for these first round picks. It's a bit crazy for all the time that's spent doing them. And you've got to make sure that you cover the other parts of the draft. And you're right. I mean, all the way to the point where your college free agents almost become your second highest percentage of make it on these teams over that 5-year span. So it's you've got to really stay intact with the whole board. How you layer the board is so important, and stack it ends up being so important. And that order can be, I mean, one guy off, that could be your Pro Bowl player just by one guy. So the Brett spends so much time with the scouts and going in there and just bashing it out. I call it the lockdown. He locks them in there for two-week periods, and they just beat it up in there and make sure that board is layered right. It's, you know, it's a tribute to his dedication on that thing.
And he's done that without three first-round draft picks. You traded a first-rounder for Frank Clark. You traded a first-rounder for Orlando Brown. And you drafted Edward Dallaire. So without three first-round drafts, they've done it all with three times. They didn't have a first-rounder. But no, the rest of the draft is obviously vital, and it's shown how good the Chiefs have been in developing the depth, building the depth, to go and win 3 in 5 years by having the good draft picks in the second and third and on rounds, and some of the priority free agents, and certainly the seventh round that we've talked about with Isaiah Pacheco and Jalen Watson, et cetera. But they've done a pretty good job of that. And so, yeah, there's a lot of focus on the first round and all these mock drafts in the first round, because that's Thursday night. It's by itself. It's standalone. So clearly there's a lot of focus because it's a night of its own on Thursday night.
I love the lockdown. The lockdown is something that we should do here. That's actually how you guys initiated me. It was a hazing process. It was called the lockdown. Couldn't leave this room.
Well, we banned hazing here at Sports Radio 810 in 1923. So I'm pretty sure.
Seems a little weird, yeah.
Pretty sure you're wrong about that.
Yeah, it's probably.
Yeah, as far as the public
but knows. even mentioned as far as the 50% hit rate on first rounders. I mean, and that's why I always go back to, this is the second rounder, but I always like to bring up Mecole Hardman for all the people that say, well, you could have DK Metcalf. I go, yeah, you could have Andy Isabella, right? There's so many guys, and this is another reason why I don't particularly like trading up in the first round necessarily. I know everyone wants to get their guy, and it worked for Trent McDuffie. Like, it can work.
It worked for Trent McDuffie because they also had a lot of picks that year.
Correct, but like, when you trade up for a guy, that guy has to be it, and you can't miss on that guy. And first rounders, a lot of, I know this sounds so simplistic, and I'm sitting like Trent Dilfer saying you can't lose and expect to win. I get that, but when you trade up, even when people say, well, you trade up to get one of the top wide receivers or give up all this draft capital for alts. I go, but what if they get injured? What if something even happens outside of the realm of playing football? Again, there's about a 50% bust rate. Like, why would you give up extra darts and just basically try and throw a bigger dart? That's all you're trying to it doesn't make sense to me. So I actually think Andy Reid, when he says and talks about the bust rate in the first round, I think a lot of fans, I think, maybe try and listen and say, hey, this is why I personally don't like trading up.
Yeah. I mean, am I missing another first rounder besides Edwards-Helaire, FAU, Karlaftis, and McDuffie? Those are the four first rounders that Brett Veach has drafted. I mean, Orlando Brown, first rounder, Frank Clark, first rounder. The first year he had a draft, he didn't have a first rounder because of the Patrick Mahomes. So you're, so far, I don't know about FAU, jury's out on that one, but two really good picks. One that did not work out, and one the jury's still out currently because it was the most recent first rounder. But we didn't really see much of him this last year. Andy Reid, go ahead.
No,
Those are the four, right?
No, that's perfect. But I don't want to do it because I think it's going to be too long. But I was going to look at the 2021 NFL draft and go through from picks like 16 on, and it's pretty hilarious. A lot of the names, like imagine if the Chiefs would have traded up for Alex Leatherwood, the tackle from Alabama, who went 17th.
No way they would have done it, because as soon as the Raiders took him, everybody was like, the Raiders, what the hell are they doing? This guy's a second or third round pick. Why did they take him in the first round? Because Mike Mayock's mock draft that he had, and he was also the GM, but he was putting out mock drafts with his own team.
Yeah, it should have been Christian Darrisaw.
Yeah, probably if they were smarter, but you know, they're not.
23rd.
They're not. But again, that's the point. That's why they're in the position they're in.
You just go down the list of players who were drafted in the first round, and it's just, again, even if you draft high, J.C. Horn was drafted 8th overall. Trey Lance was 3rd.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get to all the players, but again, it's just my point remains. I'm going to go far enough back to where you can get a good understanding. Yeah. Last year's just too soon, but
for sure. Andy Reid continued. Seren asked Andy whether whether Rashee Rice's situation will affect the draft and what the left tackle situation looks like.
You're all over this thing. I can tell you're deep into it. I like it. So those are two positions. Yeah, we are looking at, but I mean, we're looking, Brett's looking at all of them. So you're sitting at pick 32. So it's a tough, it's tough to tell you what's going to take place there. It's a great thing on one hand to be 32nd because you've done okay, and then on the season before, but that's a long wait, and you better really stay true to true to the board, what's there, and take the best player you possibly can, you know, at that spot. So, but I would tell you those two positions he's looking at, but he's also kind of going through everything. So we've got spots and depth that we could use really everywhere. And then, you know, we'll just see with the whole Rashee thing, how that goes. But, you know, we should have, when it's all said and done, we should have players in there ready to go.
Let's go next to Pete Sweeney. Go ahead, Pete.
Coach, just following up on Seren with the left tackle position, you guys were able to get 4 starts out of Wanya Morris as you look to build the roster for this year. You feel a lot of confidence about him if he did have to start a left tackle, and just generally, how are you feeling about that position?
Yeah, I thought it was, a good introduction for him coming in and having that experience of playing in 4 games. He has even a better feel now for this offseason and what's going to be expected of him when he gets back and is put in that spot. So, there's got to be an improvement. There's got to be an urgency there, which I know he feels. So he's back in town here and working. So he's when he wasn't here, he was down in Dallas working out. So he where a lot of players go, quite a few offensive linemen are down there doing the same thing. So he was able to get in that mix and work with those guys. So it looks like he's in pretty good shape right now. And I think he understands, what it takes to be an every down guy at that spot. But again, there'll be competition. He's got to, he's got to make sure that he takes care of business there.
And Andy continued and wrapped up with talking about that they feel good about what they've done in free agency heading into the draft.
Yeah, so, we feel comfortable with what we've done there with the free agency. Brett's always going to keep his eyes open on that. Does a great job in that area. And I would tell you this part, Darren, the ability that we've had to bring guys back here, the quality of the guys that we brought back here, I think is a real tribute to, you know, Chris Shea and his position, his new position now, and his guys. So, and then Brett for going out and getting in. We always thank Clark Hunt for this because it comes out of his wallet. And he's been, you know, he's, like I always mention, he gives us an opportunity to win in that area. So, Chris Jones, let's not slight that one. That's a pretty big one. And Dana is big in the same position there. Nadi coming back is big. That strength up front, I think it all starts there and becomes very important for us as we go forward there. So,
and definitely, of course, if you look at a three-peat as well. When you're, and one last question, this is by Rasheed. Knowing what you've seen, the videos, the reports, everything that's come out of your conversation with them, do you and the organization, do you all still put trust in Rasheed with his decision-making and everything?
Well, yeah, listen, as long as he's learned from it, that's it. That's the important part of it. And, you know, we'll take it from there and see, you know, see what takes place. But right now we're just kind of gathering everything and trying to make sure we have all the bases covered there.
All right, there you go. There's Andy Reid in the Phase 1 press conference they had today via Zoom. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We will wrap up this hour. Mick Schaefer will join us in the 1 o'clock hour, and we'll get some Learn Funniest Best as well. Hear from him. Get his thoughts on, you know, we spent the first hour, most of the first hour, talking about Scottie Scheffler, the Masters, and what to take away from the dominant performance from Scheffler. Also talking some Royals and the fact that they lose to the Mets and lose the series, and they sit a half game out of first place right now. And what's going on with the bullpen, Salvador Perez injury, how long he may be out, still no news from that, so it's not like there's anything to where there's an expectation that he'll be out a long time. I'm guessing he may be out for a little bit. I'm guessing an IL stint. I hope I'm wrong. I'm sort of preparing for the worst, hoping for the best.
I hope you're wrong, too, by the way.
I absolutely hope I'm wrong.
It's Salvi. He's a cyborg. He'll be out there tonight. If it was Mike Matheny, he's out there tonight.
That would be great if he was out there tonight as the DH. Not catching. We will talk with Mick Schaefer coming up next.